This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 30th of December, 1951. The title of this lecture is Yes, No, and Maybe. This lecture is 45 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
What an interesting suggestion up here on the subject of prediction along with postulates. Well, now, a postulate is actually a prediction. That's what postulate means. But let me tell you something, that this should be very clear to you and very clear in your own minds concerning this. That when a person lays down a statement to himself about the state of beingness, he is doing it on an evaluation of the past in order to take care of a situation in the future. So if you just have a fellow's postulate, as the example was, I'm nervous, or I mustn't get nervous, it doesn't blow if there was attached to it, I mustn't get nervous because mother will get upset. You see, now that's the actual evaluation of the future situation. So when you're rendering postulate processing, remember that there's an evaluation in it and that it's conditional ordinarily. And by getting the whole thing, just ask them why. Just ask them why. Why'd you make that postulate? Well, what would have happened in the future if you hadn't made that postulate? Ask them those two questions, and generally you'll get the whole thing, and then it will blow. Otherwise, you'll just get, I'm nervous, and the fellow will go on hanging on to it because he has to be nervous, or he has to be not nervous, or something of the sort, because of something. If the because of is missing, then the mind cannot do a complete evaluation of it. Now you get that. This particular part of the session, I would like to review for you something which has not altered throughout Dianetics. And that is the yes, no, maybe condition of every problem. Every problem can have a yes, a no, or a maybe as its answer. Your pre-clear is the same as he has yeses and noes, and as he does not have maybes. The number of maybes which a pre-clear is carrying in his mind is directly proportional to the insanity which he is demonstrating. Now, you get what I mean. A fellow says, well, shall I go downtown? If he says yes or no, he gets action or no action. If he says maybe, he gets turbulence. Now, life consists of action or no action. Just these two things. And, as a result, you get turbulence when a state of beingness or a state of not beingness cannot be entered with regard to any particular subject. The thinking processes of the mind consist of handling numbers of facsimiles. And these facsimiles are brought up to resolve a problem. Quite normally, these are experiences of the past which are being compared one to the other in order to get an unbalance. They say people are unbalanced. Well, when people are unbalanced, this would mean that they would sort of hanging up in maybes. But really, you don't want them to be balanced because this would mean they were dead center on all these things. You've got to have enough facsimiles on the yes side to conclude yes, or enough facsimiles on the no side to conclude no. And whenever an individual says maybe, he is saying at the same time, I do not have enough data, and he will leave the whole problem in suspension. Now, as he goes through life, these problems become in suspension, more and more problems, and they'll go progressively into suspension, and then much more actively and continuingly, he will start to show manifestations of very bad indecision and will eventually may even start to disassociate. Just because of this. He had a problem to answer yes or no, and he couldn't answer it. He answered maybe. And yes or no, and he couldn't answer it, and he answered maybe. And it was yes or no. Was it my fault or wasn't it my fault is the toughest of those problems. Was she to blame or wasn't she to blame? Was he to blame or wasn't he to blame? And where these things hang up on maybes, on major problems, an individual becomes uncertain. Anxiety is simply the state of maybeness. It's what will happen if. That's anxiety. What will happen if? A person then doesn't have a yes or a no. He has an inaction category, which is a turbulent category. He does not dare act because he does not have an answer. Answers are always held in suspension by two things: promotion of survival or the deterioration of survival. Anything which hangs up on maybe is more or less intimately concerned with failure or death. And what is the difference between extreme failure and death? No difference. So it's a gradient scale of death which hangs these problems up on yes, between yes and no, and hangs them up on maybe. There must be something fatal about one of these problems for it to have any impression or magnitude on an individual. There's something fatal associated with the problem, which is the really tough problem which hangs in the maybe category. So, when you're looking for problems, you hang up. You're pre-clear, actually, if you don't run an emotional curve. He's trying to decide something in the past. Make it past decision. Now, that's one of the hard things for a pre-clear to do sometimes. Was I guilty or wasn't I guilty? He's hanging up on maybe. He doesn't dare be guilty. And yet he thinks he was guilty. Well, one of the ways of resolving that problem is simply tipping the whole thing over by reducing the data from one of its facsimiles. So you just run one facsimile and it'll tip the problem over. Boom, then it'll fall in a yes or a no. The smooth functioning of a mind, reaction time, the ability of an individual to be decisive and therefore to be in action, is dependent upon his capability of handling problems in yes or no categories. Fear of death, or fear of having caused death, or a failure leading to death, is the only restraint on the resolution of a problem. There is no other restraint. So the tough problems on the line, you will find, are on the life continuum level, where you get this life continuum curve out, and all of a sudden the person's hung up on maybe. And this, by the way, is a mechanical method of hanging a person in suspension. A life continuum. He's hung in suspension by that mechanical manifestation. The facsimiles are all there. They are too heavy, you might say, or too painful to closely examine, and so he just sort of solves it one way or the other. If he couldn't solve this at all, he would die. And a person who experiences a death near them very often feels himself sliding in toward death himself. He goes down tone scale toward it. So, in processing preclears, here is another process which all by itself you could use. All by itself. It's just get him off all the maybes in his life. Now, if death continues to be a very, very serious thing to an individual, his maybes will be very, very serious. But if death became less serious to him, the maybes would become less serious to him, too. Whether or not people live one life or many lives, is actually a point of maybeness which an individual should resolve for himself. An individual very often loses his hope because of a maybe. You see, he doesn't hope for the future anymore. Well, if a person can't think into the future, he isn't very sane. Well, he can't hope, he can't think into the future. Well, he doesn't dare hope because maybe he will fail. Well, maybe he will fail. There's only one bar on it then. Fail? Well, that's just death, that's all. He doesn't dare do these things because he'll die. That's the automatic response you get from preclears. What would happen if you so-and-so-and-so-so? Well, I'd die. Well, that's like saying... That's the big generality. I mean, he isn't giving you any specific material at all. He'd fail, he means. Fail and die are approximately the same thing to him. All right, you take some of the weight off of death. Too much hope of living and too much fear of dying, somebody said one time. Now, you take a pilot. Pilot gets married. He gets responsible for a wife and a couple of kids. And he loses his elan. He loses that sudden dash, that sudden spurt that'll get him out of danger, and so forth. Because all the maybes back down the line begin to be hung up. See, he starts to hang up on this maybe. Maybe I will die. Now it becomes important whether or not he dies. Because he has to live for somebody else. And it's very important that they survive. And if he died, they'd fail. So he gets hung up in a maybe. You'll find this sort of a situation in almost anybody's life. You will find young children or teenagers not at all reluctant on the subject of suicide. But if you go back and examine some early suicide impulse, you'll find out that it hung up on a maybe. And the maybe was simply that would bring too much grief and sorrow to somebody else. And that would be very serious. And it's serious because it might cause their death. See how this would be? So it's fear of dying that causes the maybe line to hang up. You start resolving problems with your preclear. You'll find some preclear that doesn't know whether he should go to the store on the bus or whether he should take his car or whether he should take a bicycle or how he should go to the store. And he sits there and worries about it. He's completely lost sight of the fact that the problem is to go to the store. You just start examining his computations along this line, and you'll find out that each time he has a common denominator on the thing. Every time he gets indecisive. He isn't indecisive about the main problem. He's got to go to the store. But it's whether you go by bus or by bicycle or by his own car or walk. There is a worry about transportation. So there's a big maybe hanging up on the line someplace about transportation. Did he cause the wreck or didn't he? Run an emotional curve on it and it'll fall right out in your lap. It isn't the maybe on going to the store. It's the maybe on vehicles. Because you'll find out that after you've asked him for unresolved problems and you describe many unresolved problems to you, they're usually very light problems. They don't amount to anything. Each one will contain a common denominator to all of them. And that is the big maybe. Did he cause it or didn't he? Well, he isn't resolving that problem. And you'll find that he's only stuck only in incidents where he's hung up in a maybe. You want to get an individual unstuck off the time track, clean up his maybes. Now, there's several ways to clean up maybes. One of them is just getting to face the problem with current data. That's all. Face the problem with current data. And reevaluate and re-predict from the point where he hung up in the maybe. He made a decision once. Was it the right one or the wrong one? And that is the start of the maybes. He made a decision once. Was it the right one or the wrong one? Now he gets afraid to make decisions. So he hangs these decisions up in maybe, and there's the anatomy of it. You'll find that any place an individual is stuck on the time track, I repeat this, because you want to know how to free individuals on the time track, this is how you free them. If you don't immediately find the data, which leads to a maybe, was he right or was he wrong? You run an emotional curve on it, or just run the doubt button, or the I don't know, or the doubt, or I'd rather not decide, or feelings of indecision, till you get enough data to spot the place where he's stuck. And it'll tell you right away what this was. It's quite a valuable tool. Actually, this tool comes out of Boolean algebra. They work out their big switchboard systems in Bell and so forth on yes and no. Yes and no. And all these machines have to answer in terms of yes and no, yes and no, yes and no. All of a sudden, all the machinery stops someplace. Somewhere along the line, it didn't go into the slot on a yes or a no. It just didn't go anyplace. And the whole circle breaks down at that point. And this is the way they use to break a circuit. Instead of hanging up in a yes or no, yes or no, yes or no, yes or no, why, sooner or later, one of them's going to hang up in the maybe, and the circuit gets broken at that point. Now, they can set it up so the circuit will break anytime it hits a maybe. And this is very plain. I mean, this isn't very, very hard to understand, although it's mathematics and Bell telephones and all the rest of that. That's very simple. Here's your problem. Is John Jones home? Goes over, plugs itself in automatically, rings. Rings, 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 rings. It's waiting for you to say, no, he isn't home. But if you won't say that, then it will. After a while, it'll unplug on the line, and it'll go over and find an operator. It'll just unplug and hook into the operator switchboard. Now, it can even wait. Some of these things can even unplug and then wait to find out if you hang up. And it keeps getting off of its maybes. It keeps going on to a maybe and then getting off of it again. And that's the way the mind does. That's the way it does its thinking. It goes on to a maybe and comes off of it. And it goes on to one and comes off of it. And on to one and comes off of it. There's always an instant of maybe before there is a decision. Even though it might be just a millisecond. There's still an instant of maybe. Because the problem, in course of resolution, does a scan across its data. And the second that it scans its data, it, of course, scans both sides of the situation, to some degree, and arrives at a decision. Now, you'd be surprised how many individuals in a tough spot, just to get off of a maybe, will make a desperate decision. Really desperate. Criminal, for instance, up for trial would rather be found guilty and electrocuted than to stay on that maybe. He will say anything. He will confess to anything sometimes, if he's really restimulated, just to get off the maybe. Maybes are painful somehow because they hold all these incidents in suspension. Yes? What do you mean, the maybe curve?
Yeah, a thought
curve. Well, sure, there is. But the point is that an individual goes through all of these various cycles of thought automatically when he's trying to sort out a problem. You take an accident after which a person has become very anxious. And you'll say, well, he became anxious because of the impact against him. Rats, individuals were made to be knocked to pieces. I mean, they can take a lot of that. There's a maybe in there someplace. You find that maybe, and you'll resolve the accident. Now, if you speak of a thought proposition there, you'll find the individual going downscale, actually, with thought. Yes, no, yes, no, 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 maybe, maybe did I do that? You'll find him worrying. What's worrying? It's, was it yes? Was it no? Is it yes? Is it no? Is it yes? Is it no? Is it no? Is it no? Is it no? Yes? Is it no? Anybody have a parent that did this? And then suddenly make up his mind only to go 24 hours and change it utterly. Because you see, you can't be right. You've got to be wrong or something like that is entering in there. And you get somebody who wants to have his worries eased. Well, you can just sit there and postulate, process him on yes and no. Just that. Why back forth? What problem in your past did you fail to solve? Oh, I failed. Didn't fail to solve any of them. Not me. Well, did you make a decision one time which you regretted afterwards? Yes. You get an immediate response on it. Did you make a decision one time which you regretted afterwards? It's quite interesting. The variety of answers to this one simple question makes you an awful smart auditor. One of the manifestations of inefficiency and inaction are maybes. And you get somebody who has gone into a great deal of inaction. He's hung up on a bad maybe someplace, and you certainly better process out that maybe as one of your first things you do with him. When did you make a decision that you regretted? Of course, you see, regretting a decision is to hold it in suspension or try to put it out of time. And then there's worry afterwards. Was it right? Was it wrong? Was it right? Was it wrong? But if it's irrevocable, he'll never be able to get it back again. Bong. That's a bad one. Did it result in? Now, you take a decision which resulted in the death. Oh, boy. That's what got wrong with flight commanders during the war. They keep making these decisions. They're called on to make decisions all the time. And, of course, in high active combat and so forth, that sort of thing, practically every decision they made, it resulted in a death. After a while, these guys would get really wacky. Somebody did a movie on it one day called High Command or something of the sort. But your flight surgeon should be in there pitching with Dianetics. And after he sees the boy getting a little bit indecisive on the thing, he will recognize that his next few decisions are going to be very, very sour. And he's going to kill a lot more men than he would otherwise. He's going to start making decisions not out of reason, but out of desperateness. He's going to spend much more time thinking about how desperate the situation is than he's going to spend on how to get the men back alive out of it. He's hung up on too many maybes. That time, the flight surgeon tells the executive officer that he better take over. He's taking the other boy off for a couple of days. Give him some fast process and kick him back in there again. In an efficiently run country such as this, this naturally is the condition which obtains today in all of our air forces. By the way, it sounds sort of ridiculous to you that it doesn't obtain, doesn't it? Because the lives of an awful lot of pilots, in just straight operation, has nothing to do with war or combat. You want to know why these B-29s crash, and stuff's going to hell in a balloon? We're getting some terrific numbers of military crashes. It's not just the increased number of planes in flight and the deterioration of personnel available. It's the continued operation of operations officers who went through a war. Operations officers who made a decision wrong. Once, twice, three times. And after that, they just make decisions. They've got to. It says right there in the orders that an officer on this post makes decisions. So they have to do it. You get the idea. This will result in bad orders, bad routines. And the nervousness associated with this will go all the way through a squadron, even to its maintenance and repair units. Everybody gets into a sort of an apathy about the whole deal. Well, so we didn't put any propeller tips on number four. It's going up today at 4 o'clock. Well, it'll probably crash anyway. It doesn't matter much. Yeah. Now, when you get one airline accident, everybody has made a postulate for a long time. In the old railroads, they made this postulate. When you get one train wreck, you get two more. So, a couple of engineers help out the human race. Crash, crash. They do the same thing in airlines and so forth. It's not safe, in other words, to have individuals around operations of any character who hung up in very many maybes because they don't think. After a while, they're just desperate. They say, all right, bring in your executioner. It's just going to happen anyhow. I can't stop it from happening. Because the fellow sat there at his desk and sent these guys out, and he flew the whole mission, and he flew them all the way back home again. He counted when they come back home, there's three missing. He was not able to make the grade. He'll become psychosomatically ill because he'll turn on all the efforts required to fly that mission. He'll turn them all on. and you'll start going by the boards. One of the efforts you turn on to make other people do things is the same effort you make to make little babies eat. It gives people ulcers. You're not accomplishing the mission. If you don't accomplish this sort of thing, so on. The answer to a bad maybe is double. There are two answers to a bad maybe. And don't neglect the second one, because this is life, living, processing. Let's go out and do it again. In action. Action. The value of action is tremendous. You would be amazed how much action anyone is capable of. A person sits around and thinks too long. Indians used to have a name for it. It's called the sickness of long thinking. Starts dropping back out of action. Starts re-stimulating some old maybes. Anything to keep busy. The next thing you know, the fellow is really enforcing inaction upon himself because of this re-stimulation. He can just pick himself up by the bootstraps and throw himself out willy-nilly into some kind of action, preferably dangerous action. Preferably dangerous action. He sometimes comes up right as rain. Why is it that an individual wounded in the front lines does not show any war neurosis of any character whatsoever as long as he remains in the front line first aid dressing station? All shot up. If he could be sent back to duty, he'd stay as sane as they come. But when you remove him back to the field hospital and then back to the base hospital, by the time they get back to the base hospital, they're all messed up. They start to demonstrate all sorts of strange manifestations. You've gotten them away from action. Away from the imminence of action. You've changed their action goals. You change a person's action goals and you have a lot of trouble with them. Trouble is, man, as I have said before, man was built to be struck at by boa constrictors or lions or something about three times a day. There's nothing like being struck at by lions or boa constrictors three times a day to keep you up in present time. And as a result, your action then utilizes all the past counter-efforts. These past counter-efforts become left over the second that you go into inaction. You start into inaction, and you get a lot of leftover counter-efforts, which you're not using. Your athletic heart is a physical manifestation of just this. The fellow has a lot of counter-efforts, and he gets them left over, so he'll exhibit them in some fashion whatsoever. There's why your highly trained athlete goes to pieces when he's 30. Bushwa, he doesn't go to pieces when he's 30. There's no reason for him to go to pieces by the time he's 100. But he just stopped his action goals, that's all. You start looking down the track and find the action goals for pre-clear and process these, you'll get some interesting results on a case, too. So here's your maybes. Here's your maybes. The person goes into life, he's going to make a bunch of postulates about how he's going to keep on going, and he makes these postulates about what he's going to do, and then after a while he makes postulates on he's going to do something else. So between the postulate he makes when he's 21, the postulate he makes when he's 35, there's a disagreement. Now he starts to compare all this data, and he'll all of a sudden hang up in a maybe, and there's another way to do it. He tries to find out, what the heck, what's going on, what's going on here? He can't tell the difference between these two postulates, which one is the most important. Because the earlier one, to some degree, has precedence, to some degree, has slightly greater precedence than the later one. He's in bad shape then. So get your pre-clears off the maybe, and you'll have people who will go into action. But if you people are kept in maybe, they will stay in inaction. And you should know this very well, and you should understand it thoroughly, because the manifestation of neurosis or insanity is completely undirected action or inaction. And these two things have to be resolved by the auditor. And if they aren't resolved by the auditor, he might as well just skip the rest of the case. Because this preclear will not go into action. This preclear will lie on the couch and would rather go through effort processing or other kinds of processing ad infinitum rather than go into action. Because action means they'd have to make a decision. Because what is action? It's a continual running fire of the estimation of effort. Rapid estimation of effort. and action with good randomity demands all of the faculties and alertness of the mind. And if you feel you don't have time for processing, go out and get a racing car and drive it for a while. Drive it at 110 if it will only go safely at 90. You come up to present time. Go out and jump in some parachutes or something. Action, preferably dangerous action. A fellow by the name of Hitler, one of his boys was yakking around about this. They observed it empirically. And so they handed a motto out to German youth. Live dangerously, they said. Yeah. Yeah. Oddly enough, German youth bought it. A relatively small army mopped up all the armies of Europe and England. Mopped them up to a standstill. And Russia. And then we stepped in and finished them off. That isn't, by the way, the Russians, the way the Russians tell it. Well, I'd like to spend these last few minutes asking for your opinions on methods of operation in the field. Of course, many of you have established your own method of operation in the field. Many of you are handling this as you intend to handle it. There is the standardized method, a little bit archaic, of having somebody into the office and processing them for a couple of hours a session. There's the 36-hour intensive, whereby you process them for 6 hours a day and you collect your fee and this sort of thing. Well, is it getting the job done for you? Or is it getting the job done for the country? Or are you hanging up just on an individual pre-clear here and there and tying up the whole forward progress by saying, well, my professional career is based upon whether or not I do something for this one case. Now, that's what's important. I handed you out some mimeo sheets which delineated some methods of operation. Now, these are very far from the best methods of operation, undoubtedly. But these are methods of operation. You have a new tool. You have this handbook for pre-clears. And that is going to be refined in the coming months, but not for you to count on too much because I've got quite a bit of writing ahead of it. Be refined so that it takes three new forms. One of these forms is so that you have a section to hand out at a time, with so many hours for him to spend on each section before he goes to the next section. In other words, you really put his hands on the tools with it. And it is handed out to you as a bound, that is to say, as just a folded-in set of sections, which you then hand out to the pre-clear, section by section. And he has to call in and check with you in order to get another section. And it might even be to the point where you can write on these things Monday, Wednesday, Tuesday, and Friday, or something of the sort. And you really have him routinized. You get him regimented on the subject. He's much more likely to carry through like this. Another form of it, of course, is the very, very simple form, the child's form. And there's this present form. And this form is the most intimate to you as an auditor because you can carry through this form and you can stand by on the pre-clear pretty closely and you can push him on through with it, or you can just use this as an auditing schedule for yourself. And you can go as far in it as you want to. That is never giving him the book at all, just reading it to him. But you'll find out that you'll get tired of doing that and you'll eventually give him the book. Well, anyhow, how you use this book is of great interest to everyone. It is hoped that this book can be issued only through auditors. Of course, you cannot prevent somebody from buying a copy of this book if they come charging in and they want it for some purpose or other. I mean, you can't prevent them from doing that. But that's kind of a silly thing for a person to do when he could get this book through an auditor, and it is an auditing book. And it's hoped that this book can stay channeled and this process can stay channeled through qualified auditors and not go wandering off far afield. Of course, I have undoubtedly that there will be somebody in New York and somebody in Los Angeles is going to come out with some kind of a duplicate called Creative Spittlepuffs or something that look like this manual. They copied everything in the past. And I wish they'd copy them up to date, though. They get us in bad because they use these old techniques back there around 1949 or something like that. You ever hear of anybody getting stuck on the time track in Dianetics? The reason people get stuck on the time track in Dianetics is because they have maybes about the efficacy of the technique early in its process, which they never resolve after they find out that it's workable. Think of that one for a minute. There's the question. It's like an individual who starts out to find something that he has lost. His first thing he says is, "I've lost my keys." Then he says, "Where are they?" That's nice. He's lost something. He says he's lost them. Then he goes looking for them. Of course, his chances of finding them are pretty faint. My little girl one time had an answer to this. He says, "Well, you just go back to the nearest point where you were when you lost them and then stop and think of exactly what you were doing at the time when you noticed they were gone, and you'll find them." And by the way, it works. Of course, the person goes back, and he just goes back earlier than his postulates, and he resolves the problem. But the first thing a person does when he tries to find something, usually, because actually the only reason a person loses something is because he wants to get rid of it, the thing for an individual to do is just to remember where it is and go get it. Automatic response. Instead of that, they say, "I've lost it." Well, in the same way with the process, a person says, "Well, maybe, I guess, I hope, but of course, last time it didn't, so I hope, I guess, maybe." Then they work it on somebody and skyrockets or something happens, and they say, "Gee, this is all right, but all this time," they've made a postulate earlier than that, says maybe. Well, they get enough of these things, they'll get pretty uncertain after all. And their inexorableness as an auditor deteriorates. Because it's inexorableness which resolves cases. Much better than ARC. "There it is, you're going to get well." "Yeah, but I..." "What?" "I didn't hear you." Yeah. "The guy said something," and so on. And I was to Mayo Clinic and so on. "What were you saying?" No, I mean, take this book. Get well. Go ahead, go work it now. Yeah, sit down over in the chair over there and start work." You'd be surprised what pre-clears will do. They'll just go to work, most of them. It's the obvious solution that some auditor might never have thought of. Because if you're busy doubting, then you've knocked about 50% out of what you can do for the pre-clear, and you've extended your processing time a long time. Well, the use of this book, how you use it, and how it best works out, is of very great interest to all of us. To all of us. And I would like to ask you to let me know at the foundation as soon as possible, as soon as you think you know how it's working, what you're doing with it, or what you can't do with it, something of the sort. This is for two reasons. One, to revise text, and the other, to revise how it's being handled. Now, I'm sure if all of us put our brains and experience together on this situation, our minds and experience, we can work out three or four standardized, heavily standardized uses, can't we? And we won't, all of us, go into the business of having to make a project anytime we want to shift. It'll be fairly well codified. But of course, if we all wait for somebody else to make a project out of the whole thing, then we're never going to find out. So everybody just has to assume full responsibility as though he were the only person who was going to find out and go ahead and find out how it's best worked out and how he best uses it and what its, the liabilities are, including economic liabilities of using it in certain ways. And we'll put this thing together. As soon as you think you know, as soon as you've got some experience on this line. Now, the preclear's reaction, or his state of beingness as the book travels along or something like that, shouldn't even be part of the report. It's just whether or not you can keep him rolling on it. Now, we know these techniques work. It's how hard do you have to work to make these techniques work? We want to know that. Wouldn't you say that it might be a good stunt for each of you to take responsibility of finding out, using your imagination and ingenuity? Here in Wichita, we'll be carrying forward a project, and you will be in receipt of that data. Well, can I be in receipt of your data? Let's get this thing into a package form which gives the least amount of trouble to an auditor, best resolves his economic problems, and most resolves the various goals which we're trying to attain in Dianetics. We want this thing to go a long way. We want it to do a lot for a lot of people. Now, let's see how best we can do this. Now, are you in agreement with that as a method of operation? Good. Yeah. Yes. Success. I'd like to know a last report on what happened to that series of arthritis cases that we were running earlier in December. I haven't heard.
Real easy. The good students take care of them in 9 to 18 hours. The other students in 18 to 36. With the techniques we were using at that time.
They're cleaning up.
Right.
Well, I want to see some miracles spring up in various parts of the land because they have a certain startling value. Of course, if you could bring up enough miracles fast enough, you realize the whole medical profession would drop dead. You realize that? A fast enough curve. So don't bring these miracles up in 3, 4, 5 days. Do them in an afternoon. Go down, stand outside the morgue. You see a body that isn't too badly charged? Why, say, all right, what life continuum are you doing? Something like that. Well, at 8 o'clock tonight at the Lassen Hotel, there will be a party to whom you were all invited cordially. And I hope to see you there, and I'm very sorry if some of you have to climb aboard planes, trains, buses, or roller skates and get out of here before then. And we will miss those of you who have to go. I wish to thank you very, very much for your very kind attention, your attentiveness, your brilliance, and your good fellowship during this conference.